I'll go ahead and introduce our first speaker is Sarah Lyons from Cornell University. How much nitrogen should you apply to winter cereal double crops in the spring?
Thank you so much for the introduction. And again, my name is Sarah Lyons, and I'm part of the Nutrient Management Spear Program at Cornell, and I'm going to be talking with you about double cropping in New York. So first, I'm going to introduce you to double cropping in New York and what that entails, and then walk you through a couple of the objectives of our studies. I'll walk you briefly through the materials and methods and then get right on into the results, which include yield of winter cereals grown as double crops in dairy rotations. I'm going to talk about the most economic rate of nitrogen for these winter cereals managed as forage in the spring. Some predictive soil and management indicators that we're using to possibly predict how much nitrogen these plants need, as well as some economics of double cropping. So is this feasible for farmers in New York? So forage production in New York is primarily centered around dairy operations, and it's typically only one main crop per growing season. And this consists of corn silage for 3 to 4 years and alfalfa grass hay for 3 to 4 years in most cases. It's not uncommon for manure to be applied in the fall following corn silage harvest. And unless a cover crop is used, the ground is left bare over the wintertime, and that could have some negative environmental consequences. So we're going to be addressing some of those here. So double cropping is just the practice of having two crops per year, and both of those crops will be harvestable. There are many environmental benefits to double cropping, and these are in line with cover cropping, like reduced risk of erosion, some end-of-season nutrient uptake after corn silage harvest, in addition to some organic matter. In addition, double cropping can provide a harvestable forage in the spring, which can be really useful for dairy farmers in New York. It helps them spread the production risk a little bit, so if there's a drought year like we had this year, they have something to fall back on. It can increase their total yield per hectare, and it can also be used as an emergency forage. So just in case they're down on their main crop, they have something they can feed to their cattle. There are some challenges with double cropping, however, and the biggest one we've run into is timing, both of the double crop and of the main crop. So in the Northeast, our growing season is pretty short because of our long winters. And sometimes the corn silage harvest can be pushed back for various reasons in the fall. And we also often have an early onset of frost. And so this can make getting the winter cereals into the ground quite challenging for farmers in New York. Additionally, we want to optimize the yield and quality of these winter cereals if we're managing them as a forage. And this can be tricky because if you want to wait long enough to get a desired yield, then you might have to push back your main crop planting, which can cause some issues. And again, if you plant your main crop a little bit late, this could possibly reduce your yields in the summer. So I'll bring this up again when I talk about the economics to see if this would really be a major issue for farmers. So the objectives of our trials were to, one, determine the most economic rate of nitrogen and the yield for these winter cereals harvested for forage in the spring. So what are we looking at in terms of management? How much yield can we get from these? I want to identify soil and field characteristics that could possibly predict this most economic rate of nitrogen. So at green up in the spring when all the snow goes away, can farmers predict how much nitrogen they'll need to apply? And we also want to evaluate the economic feasibility of double cropping across different scenarios specific to New York farmers. So the materials and methods of this trial, we had 58 on-farm trials over 3 years. 21 of those were cereal rye and 37 were triticale. We used a randomized complete block design with 4 replications, as noted over here on the right. The units on the figure are in pounds per acre because this is what the farmers use in New York. But we did have 5 nitrogen rates applied at green up in the spring using agrochain treated urea. And these rates were 0, 34, 67, 101, and 134 kilograms of nitrogen per hectare. And these were nitrogen rate trials, so the goal was to produce a yield response curve to determine that most economic rate of nitrogen. We harvested the plots at flag leaf stage in May, And in terms of statistics, we used Prop Reg of SAS to use for a quadratic plateau to determine that most economic rate of nitrogen. And we also used a regression tree analysis in R, and this was to help us identify some key indicators in the soil and management that could help us predict that MERN. So here are some of our MERN results. So as you can see, a big chunk of the sites had MERNs of zero. So these sites didn't require any additional nitrogen to reach their optimal yields. So their yield response curve was flat. That's about a third of the sites had this. For the rest of the sites that had MERNs greater than zero, so they did need some nitrogen to increase their yield to the optimum level, the minimum MERN that we found was around 34 kilograms of nitrogen per hectare. The maximum went all the way up to 142 kilograms, but on average, they needed anywhere between 80 and 100 kilograms of nitrogen per hectare. And I did want to point out that these species were not on the same fields, so we're not directly comparing them, but they're just two winter cereal examples that we're looking at in our trials. So here's a visual of those yields, or of the MERNs, and on the y-axis we plotted the MERNs against the yield at the MERNs. And there's an interesting distribution here. So we have about 50% of our sites had MERNs anywhere between 78 and 110 kilograms of nitrogen per hectare. So all of these sites did need some nitrogen to reach their optimal yields. And then another third of the sites, again, required zero kilograms of nitrogen to reach their optimal yield. But you can see there's a big difference in yields within those two groups. So something that we're going to be looking at in the future is how to separate out these two groups, you know, which sites are going to give you a big yield with their MERN and which sites aren't and why. So the MERN indicators that we used, so what we did is we took soil samples in the spring before we applied nitrogen just to kind of get a baseline value of some soil characteristics going into the trials. And we also did a survey with farmers asking them what kind of management practices they employed. So for the soil indicators, we looked at a whole slew of variables, so ammonium nitrogen, nitrate nitrogen, ISNT to critical ISNT ratio, pH, buffer pH, a bunch of soil nutrients tested with the Morgan test, and organic matter. And this is not all of the parameters we measured. These are just some I picked out. As far as management indicators, we asked farmers about whether they applied manure in the past. Is their field drained? What crops have they grown in the past? And we looked at soil type and management group just to kind of get an idea of what could be separating out these different sites. So the soil indicators that came up that were most important were namely soil test phosphorus was the most important one that we saw, and this could be indicative of past fertility management, so manure applications. Some other ones that came up were buffer pH, magnesium, the ISNT ratio, and nitrate nitrogen. So the way you read this regression tree is if the statement is true, so if you have a soil test phosphorus of less than 13 milligrams per kilogram, you move left on the branch. So for example, if you have a field with a higher soil test phosphorus than 13, you'll move right, so that statement's false. If you have a magnesium level of less than 291 milligrams, then you move left. If you have a buffer pH of less than 5, you move left again, and then that leaves you with a MERN of 0. So what we found is that if you have less soil test phosphorus, so if you're in this side of the branch, for the most part, your MERNs are higher. So if you have lower soil test phosphorus, you're more likely to have a positive MERN. You're more likely to need nitrogen. And for the most part, on the right side here, if you have a higher soil test phosphorus, your MERNs are likely to be lower. So 0, 37, and 46 kilograms are fairly low in our trial. There's one exception if you have an ISNT ratio of less than 1, and that represents potentially mineralizable nitrogen in the soil. If you have a low value of ISNT, then you have a higher MERN, which would make sense. And I wanted to just summarize that in words because it's a little bit busy with the graph. So the MERN was primarily impacted by soil test phosphorus, but it was also influenced by a couple of other parameters that we found. Sites with soil test phosphorus levels less than 13 milligrams per kilogram and buffer pH less than 6 had higher MERNs. or if you had a higher soil to phosphorus but lower I-S-N-T ratio. For these sites, we would recommend between 70 and 100 kilograms of nitrogen. So, and remember that graph with the yield against the MERN, that big chunk, the 50% that needed in that range. If you had a higher soil test phosphorus and lower, the sites with the higher soil test phosphorus had lower MERNs, except when the I-S-N-T ratio was low. For those sites, we would recommend between zero, so not applying any nitrogen, or just a little bit, around 40 kilograms. To jump into the economics of double cropping, so this was a study conducted in 2015 looking at a number of different scenarios that farmers could come across in New York in a double cropping system. So the way you read this is you determine, you know, kind of what your situation is. So on the top here, if you don't want to have any impact on corn silage yields, you're not willing to risk that, and if your MERN is zero, so if you don't have to apply any nitrogen, your break-even yield is 1.7 megagrams of dry matter for your winter cereal. So you have to at least have that much to break even economically. If you have a MERN greater than zero, which we picked an average value of around 84 kilograms, and you still don't want to have an impact on corn silage, you have to break even. You have a break-even yield of about 2.2 megagrams of dry matter. Worst case scenario, if you are to lose 2 megagrams of dry matter in corn silage yields, which again, this doesn't always happen, but it could, if that does happen and you don't want to apply fertilizer, you have to have at least a yield of 3.8 megagrams of dry matter. So these thresholds go up as your risks rise. And again, if worst case scenario, if you lose some corn silage yields and you have a MERN that's greater than zero, you have to have at least 4.5 megagrams of dry matter. So we wanted to see how feasible this was based on our database. So we looked at where our data lies in this range. And we found that almost 100% of our sites had at least 1.7 megagrams of dry matter yield. So most of our sites reached that minimum threshold. And as you go up the line in risk, you still find that more than half of our triticale sites reach that maximum threshold of 4.5. So if you lose two megagrams of dry matter in corn, you invest in fertilizer, we still had a good bit of our sites reach that threshold, that break-even yield point. So in summary, about a third of the sites didn't require any additional nitrogen, while about half needed between 78 and 110 kilograms of nitrogen per hectare. The yield at the MERN ranged from 1.5 to 6.8 megagrams of dry matter, averaging 3.6 for cereal rye and 4.5 for triticale. Soil test phosphorus was the main driver for the MERN, reflecting past soil fertility management. Sites with lower soil test phosphorus, buffer pH, and I-S-N-T ratios were more likely to have positive MERNs. Break-even yields range from 1.7 to 4.5 megagrams of dry matter, but over half of our sites met the break-even yield for no fertilizer addition and 2 megagrams of dry matter loss in corn silage yields. So in conclusion, winter cereals as double crops can provide a valuable forage and increase total yield per hectare for dairy operations in New York. If you harvest winter cereals as a forage, then you need to manage with nitrogen in order for optimum performance. And double cropping can be really profitable for farmers if managed correctly. So what's next? We want to determine the effect of nitrogen fertilization on quality. We want to further investigate the soil and management parameters and the influence of the MERN, so try to find some more explanations of what's going on, even try some different modeling strategies like a hurdle model perhaps. We want to evaluate the forage quality in a TMR to see what the feeding quality is in a ration for a New York dairy. And we're also planning on surveying producers and nutritionists about their experiences with this stuff to see what's going on currently in the state and how we can improve our research questions. And with that, I'll take any questions.
So questions for our speaker?
Yes.
So if you harvest it for forage, what would follow what would be the harvest time?
Okay, so the question is, if you harvest this up for a forage, then what would follow that harvest? So, and when? So we are harvesting this forage in May at flag leaf stage. I think there was a range between like early May and mid to late May for the harvest in our trial. And then in a rotation, in a common dairy rotation, this would probably go to corn silage right after that. So these crops would be grown during the corn silage years that we have. So that's an interesting question. So he was asking, for the sites that didn't require any additional nitrogen, were they low in pH? So actually the pHs for our trial were all really similar. There were acceptable pH ranges from, I think, like 5.5 to 6.5 to 7. So we didn't see any deficiencies in pH, but we did have a few sites that were very deficient in phosphorus, very deficient in potassium, and we also have a whole slew of soil types in New York, I think 600 soil types, so there could be some soil type interactions there. Right, so that was buffer pH on the regression tree, and we think that's more reflective of the soil type because we have so many. We have from really heavy clays all the way up to really light sandy soils.
My first question is the buffer pH of those soils, were they uniformly below 6?
I have to go back and check, but I'm pretty sure. I mean, when you look at a box plot of the data, all of the ones with lower buffer pHs were lower in the MERNs, or 0, right, and the ones that were high were high.
All right, let's thank our speaker.
Thank you.